Okay, good evening, fellow discussion participants. And we're here again on Wednesday evening, 7 o'clock Pacific time, to continue our discussion of the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. This is what the latest trade edition looks like. And we've been working on this. Gee, I don't know how many weeks. Do you know how many weeks into this we are, Marvette?
I think it's the number
17. You say 17, Harry?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, well, we might have to have the rabbis, discuss this and write commentaries, but we think that we're somewhere between 17 and 20 in our discussions, and we haven't gotten very far into the readings themselves that are done for the Voyager in the American Book of the Dead, because we've been going quite slowly. We've been looking at the text, focusing very, very intensely on what E.J. Gold has written here on the introductory matter. We read the six dimensions and the
Introduction to the macro
dimension. And how to use this book. These are the sections at the beginning of the American Book of the Dead. So I'm going to let Patricia introduce this class because she was at the last class working on chambers
4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
Well, welcome everyone. And Ivan and I are here and we are going to attempt to channel David. And so if we say the wrong thing, it will be up to you to indicate that to us. So please feel free to let us know by the phone message or through one of the comments in the chat. Let us hear, that we've forgotten something. But I believe the way we usually begin is to thank everyone for being here together. And our work together this evening will apply itself in attention to the text for the 4th, 5th, and 6th chambers, as we did last week, but in a slightly different manner. And first, we're going to ask if folks were able to successfully do the exercise that was directed again for last week, which was to give and receive at least one of the readings of Chamber 4, 5, and 6. And I'll just open that up to whoever would like to respond to that question.
And maybe Harry or Silverdale can read us the comments from
or they can blog. They can offer their own.
Or you can offer your own comments.
I will offer some comments if you don't mind. We were able, R.C. Barron and I, as well as Susan Kester and I, to read to each other. And R.C. and I on two different occasions. It was very interesting and very enlightening. It had a different vibe to it, and I learned a great deal about learning to accommodate what is appropriate way to read for another person. And the questions to ask that helped me gather that information in a meaningful way.
That is so wonderful. Could you give us one example of something that you learned specifically from doing the reading and also one example of a question that you used?
Well, I asked Susan if I were reading in a way that was meaningful for her, that she found if she found it able, it helped her to forget about her body and to enter into this space, if my reading assisted in that. And she said that I was putting emphasis on certain words that I obviously thought were very important to the meaning of the text, and to make it a little bit more neutral without it becoming prosaic and too uniform, but to allow her to fill in those gaps for herself. And I had no idea I was doing that, and I think it was a great help. for me when I read for others. So that was one question that I asked, and that was the response she gave me that I thought was most useful. She, in turn, asked pretty much the same question, and I asked if she could read more slowly, because when I get in that space, for some reason, going too quickly puts too much information too fast, and I can't make the internal representations I like to really fill it out. So reading it much more slowly was very helpful for me, and she was very accommodating in doing so. RC and I happen to have a natural rhythm that's pretty much in sequence with one another. So we seem to make that adjustment a little bit more easily. But the same result was had in both cases.
Good.
Wonderful. You touched a very important point here, because everyone that's sitting in this room here was nodding their heads when you mentioned the part about the too much information and needing to take it slower and just being in sync with the Voyager is that's a real key to a successful delivery of the instructions.
Rapport with the Voyager.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, what you're referring to here is that this is a sort of something of a special opportunity that we're taking advantage of, which is to say, usually you read for the Voyager and you need to feel or intuit, you know, the connection and so on. So here, you've got the Voyager is turning around and reading for you, and you're getting to question each other. So this is probably a really valuable experiment. I think it sounds to me immediately like a
priceless.
Yeah, it sounds like a very good approach for picking up on these things. And I'd like to add that as far as the rhythm of reading, it seems to me both when I'm reading and when I'm hearing somebody else's reading, I like to feel like the words, not necessarily each word, but let's say in pieces that I do understand, like phrases and sentences, that it's sinking into the pool, you know, like the pond in the practical work on self, and then I'm letting it absorb, letting it sort of sink in and spread under the surface before I'm taking in the next piece. It's something like that. You know, I don't know if that's the best image, but that comes to mind.
Does the word resonance or sympathetic resonance or being in a resonance chamber, does any of that fit with what you're saying? You.
With what I'm saying?
Yeah. Because you're a musician and a poet, and I would expect that.
I think resonance is resonance is a good word for it. I'm trying to think of whether it would be reverb. I don't think it's not reverb, which is a special effect.
Yeah.
But it's, there is, actually, here's a specific reference. You know, that one of the things about Oz Fritz that we have here is our engineer. Oz has this incredible skill in mixing, in both recording and in remixing. And I've noticed, you know, I don't know if everybody out there is aware, EJ mentions it at almost every opportunity, that Oz is a Grammy-winning sound engineer. But if you ever listen to the double album that he won a Grammy for, it was Tom Waits, and it's called The Mule Variations. And there's a certain quality there that's very special for Oz's work. It's as if there's silence around the music.
Exactly.
You know, that it's like the instrumentation on that album is very sparse, and it's as if you're feeling this kind of resonance. It's not reverb. It's a kind of it's not echo either, but it's something about, you know, he almost creates a sound space that's conjured up for you when you listen to just the CD in your own room or whatever.
Yeah.
You got a comment?
I remember Patricia telling me at one point that each word in the ABD was a world, and that sense of allowing the world to sort of come in and into being, and then having that pause between worlds, I'm really feeling that from what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of in Oz is engineering. It's something like that.
Yes.
You feel the music differently, actually. The sounds strike you differently.
May I ask whose comment that was that was just made? I thought it was excellent.
That's Tamara.
Oh, Tamara. Oh, thank you, Tamara.
Yes, we don't have the camera hoisted towards the back there, but, you know, one of these days we'll have dual split screen.
David discovered we can pass the phone around the room.
Yeah.
Also, in it.
Passing the phone.
Yeah, and gets it right to this middle microphone. Anybody else? How about other comments about doing these readings? What have you got, Dan or Silverdale?
Silverdale.
No. Basically, Pianjo just makes the comment that he with RC and he with Susan were able to establish rapport with feedback from each other, a very useful exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's the extent of the comments at this point.
Generally like that idea.
Was there anyone who was hoping to participate in this exercise who was not able to find someone to do the exercise with? And maybe you could put that on the in the chat, and we can offer to folks to, you know, continue with this if you choose, especially for people who were not able to get a receiver or a deliverer to their to their mirror image,
speak. I was actually traveling for almost a whole week, so I did not get to do this, but I can maybe I'll talk to Dan or somebody else about doing it. Actually, I'll tell you what, I'd like to make a comment since I started to talk about this with Pat, that I did attempt to say, how does that work with, like, the invocation of presence? I try to do this exercise of looking for the radiations and the colors in various chambers that I was in, because traveling really lends itself to that.
Nicely.
And, you know, for instance, like, one of the times when I immediately remembered the exercise was in these jets. You know, like, I took a jet from... actually, the original flight that I was supposed to be on was canceled. So I took a jet from San Francisco to Cleveland and then Cleveland to Newark instead of a direct flight. And I noticed the first flight out of San Francisco, you know, they turned down. It was a red eye. It was an overnight flight. So they turned the lighting down in the cabin of the plane. But this jet, this cabin, had blue, literally soft blue lights running down both sides and the ceiling, and so there was kind of this soft blue light, and I'm looking in Appendix A, and I'm seeing, sure enough, the human dimension on this chart shows Appendix A. Soft blue is the color. The basic element is sensation, and the radiation is yellow, and I would say, indeed, that, you know, I don't know what else I could associate with that soft blue light, but you know, when the lights came up and that flight was over and they let us out, I was in Cleveland. So, and if that isn't the human dimension, I don't know what is. Maybe if I'd gotten out of the airport. I
mean, editorial commentary.
It might have been the brute dimension or something. But then I got on the second flight to Newark. It actually did not have that blue lighting at all. It had definitely had white, like sort of soft white lighting. And so I'm looking that up here, and all in all, it was a shorter flight. I liked it better. It was a shorter flight. And, you know, I can't say it was a whole lot better to arrive in Newark. It was like just like another rebirth, especially after I spent a few days in
You're
Newark.
Heading into the third stage already there, Ivan.
Yeah, well, that's right. I'm a little bit ahead of Chambers 4 to 6. Well, no, that's what, but anyway, so the second flight was this soft white for sure, which is a sun absolute color, and basic element space, which I was flying through, and the radiation is blue. And of course, by the time I arrived in Newark, especially because it's 3 hours had to kick my watch 3 hours ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were, it was well past sunrise, and the sky was quite blue. And but, you know, I was also commenting to Pat, and I wonder if any other people have had this similar experience. I found that getting up above the clouds, like flying in jets, gives me a very ethereal sensation. I feel like I'm escaping gravity to a certain extent, and it feels something like the God world, you know, like above the human, that I'm above the human dimension. And I've written it a couple of times. I've written poems on jets, which are generally quite frothy or enthusiastic or something. They represent levity. They're poems that embody levity.
Loosen the bonds of these mortal coils.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And anyway, well, just in 25 words or less, I did remember to do this exercise a few other times, like on city streets and in the convention center. I couldn't quite fathom. I thought, this is really, I'm not at all sure this is the human world. I didn't know what the convention center was. It was very.
I can point it out to you later.
Okay. The sound environment, you know, in these big, like the big, I was at the book show in New York at the Javits Center for 3 days. And, yeah, the sound environment is very unusual in the convention centers. Yeah, that's right. That's what it is. It's sort of like that. Maybe the Great Mother might be in one of those, you know, on a panel in one of the rooms downstairs.
Yes.
Giving advice. Yeah, but it is like a muffled roar. It's sort of like, it is almost like being in the jet, actually. There's this muffled, this buzz,
yes,
kind of in the background.
Ongoing throb.
Yeah, of about however many it is, like anywhere from three to 7 or 10,000 people.
Yeah.
Shuffling around and talking to one another.
Yeah.
Maybe that must be the human world. Yeah.
Must be something. Must be something as close to it as possible.
Yeah. I know.
Well, you just.
Anybody else? Anybody else try that? Last week or two.
Yeah, they're
looking for the colors, the radiations.
Looking for signs of the macro dimensions in our everyday life, so to speak. Okay, well, we can come back to it if there are some comments. I'd like us to look right now at the, you can look at any one of the fourth, fifth, or sixth chamber. And what I'd like you to hold for a moment is this concept of a structure of description. So if you think of these chambers as they are written, as they are delivered to the Voyager, there is a very definite visual, descriptive, and even slightly architectural structure to the manner in which the chambers are created. And I'm just going to deliver the first three words of each paragraph, beginning with the fourth chamber. And I'll only do one chamber, but you can do this for yourself and the other ones. So beginning with the fourth chamber, at the moment, as I direct, now that I, with my labyrinth, from out of, at the same, I mustn't allow, no matter how, when wandering in, concentrating my powerful. So the first thing, as a former American literature major, that I noticed about the style of the construction of these words is it is all in present tense, all of it. And it is all in a certain manner, this moment, immediate. And it also has dramatic impact. And what I mean by that is you're in confront. There's no getting away from. And the words are exactly that. They are confrontational. Comments? Ivan? Mr. Writer Person?
To that.
Well, having spent, I don't know, 40 plus years on this text,
mm-hmm.
now I have passed it through and around my membranes various ways, over, under, and through. And that's one of the things that I know. There is a structure to the chambers as they are delivered here. And if you've ever spent any time looking at any of the other texts, books of the dead, as in Tibetan or Egyptian, there's also structure there, and we won't get into, you know, compare and contrast, but I'm just saying, structure is definitely here. Second.
Pat, is there also a sound, is there a color signature, or perhaps a flavor, or even a scent that is associated with each one?
You're coming right in there. You're
yeah.
coming right in there, exactly. So, in the first paragraph, we have a blackout. In the second paragraph, we have a sixth lower dimension revolving, sweeping rumble. Swirl, rumble, sweeping.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these, you know, sort of topsy-turvy images. Like in flux, in motion, in dramatic motion.
But those are sensations also. So
exactly.
So it's bringing your attention to these particular sensations. Yeah.
Yes, and also vibrationally, I think the description is one of, it is, like we were saying before, a throb. There
right.
is a throb, a hum, a motion. In the third paragraph, we have the words unoccluded and eternalized, and we also have the words space and time. So, you know, in a certain way, we have this almost juxtaposition of eternal and macrodimensional, and then we have the human component, space and time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of reaching out and pulling in at the same time. It's got both the farthest range and the where am I right now range.
Mm-hmm.
In the, I think we're now on the fifth paragraph, I don't remember now, I'm counting one, two, three, no, the fourth paragraph. We actually designate exactly and specifically the qualities that are this space. The qualities that are this space. And if you look again, as Ivan suggested, into Appendix A, you will see that there is the table of correspondences coding of the six dimensions as one of the listings, and that's color, element, and radiation. And then on the second side of that, you have the tendencies erased by the radiations. So those four aspects plus the name of the world that it's corresponding to or the dimension that it's corresponding to, you have six descriptive qualities of that chamber in one paragraph. So you have space, you have blue radiation, you have matter, and, excuse me, in the fifth paragraph, you have the name of the world. Yes. Take the phone so people can hear what you're saying.
Right.
Which Tamara is bringing up some points for us.
Well, I just was commenting on the fact of the narrative structure that you're talking to yourself. You're in dialogue. And it seems to me that in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, it's like, hear, O bornless one. you know, it's
third person.
Yeah, and there's something to me, you know, very powerful about, you know, you're speaking.
First person in the story.
Yeah.
Well, to put it in vernacular, which is American 20th century, you know, we think we are the center of the cosmos. So, of course, it's going to be I.
Yeah, well.
The Book of the Dead is written in the context of 1960, 70, 80, 90, the 2000s. This is a cultural context. So, yes, very good point.
Yeah, also, well, also, you know, I'd like to comment on that, that the, again, I believe we don't have all of those past editions here stacked up to consult, but when EJ started out with the readings in the format of you,
yes,
the Voyager,
yes,
like the Bardo Chodol, you know, like the Tibetan book, and he actually, at some point, which I think was in the 80s, the third or fourth trade edition of this book, he actually converted the entire set of readings to be in first person because it was the, I think I remember him speaking about this in the form that the reader, I'm reading to the Voyager, so I have a resonance, I've set up this link between myself and the Voyager. So I say, at the same moment, I become aware of a soft white light, which I somehow seem to know offers a refuge. And that's myself and the Voyager are both mm-hmm. getting that as I, together.
Ivan, there's a few comments whenever you're ready.
Good time.
Lost Horizon asks a question. Has anyone been looking for signs of the macro dimensions exercise? Has anyone been doing that exercise? And then Mark Roth said he didn't know that that was an assigned exercise, but it was interesting this last week when he found himself a few times deliberately noticing colors in environments as a sort of waking up observation thing.
Mm-hmm.
He found it quite eye-opening, mostly so far in the sense of some curiousness that we are so often surrounded by such rich colors, but often don't even notice them or read them. And could Pat elaborate a bit about what she means by structure?
I can, but I'd like to give more examples without speaking about it. I'd rather just continue on with a few other examples of what structure is occurring here. I'm going to carry on after Ivan started on the paragraph that says, at the same moment, and then it talks about the consequences of the radiations or how you are affected by the radiations. And it says, I could feel somewhat protected and buffered from this harsh, intense radiation, which burns and itches, scorching, buzzing, frequency, thrilling. So the descriptive pattern here now is about, in specific, the consequences of the effect of the radiations that are accompanying this chamber, that this chamber is made up of. And I want you to see, if you are in a chamber that is constructed from, as it says, spatial phenomena, matrix of space, threads of cosmic energy, this is the construction that I'm describing, is how the chamber is created. What is the matter, if you can use that word, which of course is a false word to use in this case, but what is the consistency of? And the descriptions that are being given to us are an intensity, the intensity of the response to the radiations describes exactly what the components of the chamber are made of. And then in the next paragraph, we have the caution. In other words, we have the note to Voyager, or note to self. Don't react. Don't give in. The description of the radiation says it dissolves karma. So, allow that. So it's like, okay, you're in a chamber. You have a view of this chamber simply from how it presents itself and what your response to it is. And then there's also a clue in the chamber itself. The radiations themselves have this clue, which is don't react. Let it burn. Let it cleanse. Let it clean you of your karma. So the two things, again, there's two descriptions included in each aspect of this. The radiations do the burning and the dissolving, and also the clue there is don't react, allow it. You get both parts. You get the presentation of the radiation and you get the information. Ah, yes, this is where I surrender. This is the point at which I do not resist. Okay? That is continued on in the next paragraph, which goes into extreme detail. And the reason why I wanted to focus on chambers 4, 5, and 6 this time is because the detail is not as rich and precise in the later chambers. The description is not as full. It is assumed that you have the context from these earlier visions. You have the context of what this journey is, and the author is not giving you the description in chamber 25 and 27 and 39. Mm-hmm. Not there. So what I mean by structure is, I mean the description of what the chamber actually consists of, what its function is, how your response to it is directed. That's what I mean by structure.
Pat, would that structure be the same for every Voyager?
Structure of the chamber is experienced individually. Chamber is archetypal.
Okay.
So experience would be different. So your perception of it would be different, and your response would be different. But the archetypalness of, quote, the fourth chamber is archetypal. So it exists as it is.
Yeah, I'm thinking another way of saying that, like what I'm getting as a way of formulating that is that there's in these texts, in these descriptions of chambers, it doesn't tell you. I remember when we were doing the angelic choirs, you know, we were trying to come up with these different chambers of heaven, like what was actually in those, what were we going to perceive there? Mm-hmm. And we were doing something like this, but I remember I had a tendency, you know, some of us, we said, oh, in this heaven there's a beautiful waterfall and there's a golden light and there's a forest with wonderful jeweled trees or something like that. Well, there's nothing like that in these texts, because there's not content. In other words, that the fourth chamber doesn't have to have a desk in it or a tree. Or, you know, it doesn't necessarily look like the inside of a jet plane or a convention center, but it could. But, you see, the things that are archetypal, the things that are defining it as a chamber, are the things that are described here in the text.
Yeah.
But the fact is that depending on your own psyche, in a sense, like your own, your DNA, and it, like Pat was saying, like what... with the fact that we're living in the 2000s and not the 1800s or the 1200s or whatever.
Or the pre's.
Yeah, whatever. Or wherever, you know, whenever the Tibetans wrote the Bardo Tadal originally or channeled it or whatever. So the content, you know, the content of your visions, let's say, your hallucinations, your appearance of your reality, it could be quite diverse. It could have all kinds of things in it. But the things that Pat's describing as a structure, you know, there are colors and radiation. There are sensations that you will have, depending on whether we're talking about space or...
And there's sound.
And there is a sound environment, a sound part of the environment.
Yes.
And what else did you say?
There's the component of the reaction that you will have to the radiation.
Yeah, there may actually be an emotional, let's say, like something
like a
tendency. Habitual emotional
mm-hmm.
atmosphere, which is, you know, or a tendency. Like,
yeah.
Like this is... There seems to be fearfulness in this chamber.
Fearfulness, yes. And then just pushing it one more step further here. If you look at the middle of the paragraph that begins, no matter how great the fear, in the middle of the paragraph it says, I am given strength to resist rebirth by, and again, this is the information contained in the chamber about how to use the chamber. I am given strength to resist rebirth by the realization that ultimately here I will be once again faced with the same dilemma. Now, I don't think that that is a very human type of realization. So we're already speaking here about the voyager's attitude to the situation. What is the stance of the voyager in the fourth chamber?
Mm.
And that is the other piece of the structure, which is it is not a human experience, it is a being experience. How do you describe in words what is the form of a being experience? This is a piece of the structure right there. It is defined by the information contained in the chamber offering assistance in the chamber to the thing that the chamber is causing you to react to.
Okay.
I think it's just very, very fine. I really like
it.
So
is that to say that if I allow myself to have that cognition, or if I allow myself to receive that information, then I will have it in that chamber.
Or I
can occlude it. If I have habitual or like knee-jerk reactions, then I'm not going to get that information.
I think if we look at this chamber
mm-hmm.
as, in a certain way, the prototype for all the chambers following it,
mm-hmm.
then we will see that this is the manner in which the information can be passed on to the being in the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
So the information is coming to the being at the time the being is in that chamber. Because it says in the earlier pages, it does not matter whether you read this today, tomorrow, last year, or next week. The experience of the voyager is that the information will be in the chamber when the voyager needs it in that chamber.
Mm-hmm.
So how else could it be? Yes, you want to talk. Tamara's coming on.
It also is very powerful when it says, in the mood of gratitude, because that communicates to me that gratitude is one of the higher emotions of being, and that gratitude will kind of take you through, the most difficult of all situations.
Yeah, if we were to analyze just this paragraph for the qualities of beingness that are listed in here, which might be something people would like to do,
mm-hmm.
you would see that there are ones that are named, which says strength, gratitude,
to accept.
Acceptance, another one a second ago, and I just lost it.
Just opportunity to escape this powerful wheel of karma. Escape is a kind of quality.
Yeah, but it's just a statement specifically about the fact that the instructions as they are given, directed to the Voyager, also contain the information to the Voyager as to how to use the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
It has the instruction about using it inside of it.
Okay.
Yeah. And then just to hit the last paragraph.
After the
prayer, the when wandering the six lower dimensions, which, by the way, there are a number of them. When wandering in the six lower dimensions is, you know, that's another aspect we're not going to get into this evening. The last paragraph says, concentrating, so there's another clue, my powerful Voyager attention in this way. So it's summing up what the instructions are, arousing in myself deep feelings of intense humility and faith in the unchangeable nature of reality, remembering, I mean, just every single word here is a quality,
mm-hmm.
an aspect of the essential self. Remembering that I cannot change what is, but I can learn to like it, I allow myself to merge and become engulfed in the halo of rainbow radiation. So now we're back to what is it that we are experiencing, the radiation. The heart of the beloved, the seat of all universal forces, the realm from which there is no return. And I think the choice of word meaning realm, realm is different than dimension and different than world.
Mm-hmm.
So it has not been used before this. It specifies exactly, to me, the fact that the realm that you have entered is the macrodimensional voyage itself. That's what it's talking about. So construction, architecture, structure, any of those words, what I'm talking about is the way in which the information is being delivered to the Voyager and what are the tools that are being used. Okay? I'm done.
Oh,
thank
nice.
You, Professor. Yeah, actually, in English composition classes, we call this the rhetoric of the APD.
Yeah.
That's what that would be.
Well, every once in a while, I get to do it.
Yeah, really? Okay.
Comments? Questions?
I think that's
did I answer
very
your
clarifying.
Question?
Go ahead, Harry.
I'm sorry, I interrupted someone then. I just said that I think that was very clarifying because our experiences of reading over these chambers several times, including the ones we just went through, we would hit on these words and they would open up, but we didn't give them enough time. I think now in the future we'll allow each one to open up a little bit broader perspective now from Pat's comments. I hadn't thought of it as architecture.
That will be interesting to me to hear from you after you have thought of it as architecture or given each of the words or phrases more space.
Yeah, each word now stands out much more by itself. Even.
Good.
You guys are doing a good job of channeling David.
Well, my mission was not to skip over it. Important.
There is another question.
There is a question here from Simon.
He says,
suppose that a person never did any kind of spiritual work, if you will, then reading to them these lectures will save them of the karmic consequences of a sleepy life? With question marks after it. That is, can reading these lectures help someone who has not been introduced to the work? Will it assist them in becoming liberated?
Well, that would be a little different, that last phrase. I'm sure that it could assist them in becoming liberated. But, you know, it says at the end, you know, there's some language toward the very end of this book, you know, which I think EJ has taken from the Bardo Tadal or somewhere in the Tibetan text, which says, you know, that this is the method of liberation of hearing. Is that it? On 49th chamber? This is jumping ahead. But I always loved that passage.
I think that was the subtitle.
This one. It is called, you know, in the 49th chamber, the last text here in the last reading, it says that, again, the meditation on the mystic path, both in the visualizing and perfecting stages while living, will be of great benefit and influence when encountering the guides in the labyrinth. So, you know, this is about doing the work, about, you know, dying before you die, or preparing for this experience, preparing all the time, preparing in life. So training is of particular importance while living in a biological machine. One should hold to it, read it, commit it to memory, bear it in mind properly, read it regularly, allow the means of the words to form in you the understanding and sense of the method, and so on. So Simon's asking about somebody who hasn't done any of this. So it goes on to say, it is called the great liberation by hearing because even those who have committed the five boundless sins, the sins of patricide, matricide, setting two religious bodies at war, so I've never tried that, or maybe I have, I don't know, killing a saint and causing blood to flow from the body of a completed man, are sure to be liberated if they hear it by the path of the ear. So, in other words, I really love this text, this particular passage. It's saying, Simon, what I believe that this is saying here is that, you know, which is, I believe there's passages like this in the New Testament also, which is like saying, well, the worst sinner, you know, that the worst murderer, the you know, the worst blasphemer, you know, the worst, the most fallen human,
mm-hmm.
or the most fallen angel, or whatever, the most fallen human could still be redeemed. I don't know. The other part I don't know about is it could be redeemed randomly, could be redeemed at the last moment, could be redeemed after eternities of repetition, you know, of going round and round and round again. Anyway, but it says here, therefore, and this is in italics in EJ's book, read it in the midst of vast congregations. Read it to heal the sick. Read it to instruct the elderly. Read it for the dead or dying, even though they don't know it is being read for them. Your invocation and readings are helping them to attain liberation. And, you know, I think that it's beyond me, I'm sure, that I don't know the details.
Well, I do have one tiny little story to add in here. And it's not to prove or disprove what Simon is asking. That's actually a wonderful question that you're asking, Simon. I want you to keep the question because it needs to continually be readdressed. So this is just one pass-through with it. But many years ago, in the early days of the Institute, there was a member of the community whose father was an engineer on the Santa Fe and train. And the Book of the Dead had just been transmitted, we might say, into its early, early, early versions, of which I have all of them,
mm-hmm.
so I can do this thing
right.
with a sequence.
Yeah.
This person's father was dying, and the first bits of the beginning information had been recorded and written down, and the son went into the father's hospital room and stood at the door. This was a father who was not particularly thrilled with his son's choice of, you know, hanging outer folks, us.
Sure.
But the father on the deathbed said, "What do you have?" And Ken said, "Oh, I have the Book of the Dead here." And he says, "That's what I need. Read it to me." And I have this, I checked this with Ken again, you know, 10 years or so ago, and wrote down everything he said. And I may not have his exact words correctly, but the fact of the matter is that Ken's dad said to him on his deathbed, "Read it to me."
Mm-hmm.
And this was a man who is a trained engineer, not spiritually as far as outward signs, was not necessarily inclined, but apparently his voyager self was aware enough to speak up and ask for the readings, which of course we all did. So I can't answer the question as to whether everyone who has had no particular inclination for work on self or, you know, completing their soul body or however you describe it, you know, that they would necessarily have that inclination or let's even just say awareness, because we're talking about a voyager attention here. And most of us know from what little efforts that we do make about arousing our voyager senses and attention when we're still inhabiting a human biological machine, you know, that is not an easy gig, and it's not necessarily one that's going to occur, quote, in ordinary life, naturally, day-to-day existence.
Yeah,
we don't know. We don't know. We don't say what somebody's experience will be. However, it is stated extremely explicitly that if you do read to a voyager, and now, so I'm dropping this picture of a person. I'm saying you read to the voyager, you read to the essential self, you read to that being, that the being has the opportunity to make use of the instructions that are being delivered.
Very, very nice.
What did you say?
Harry said very nice.
Oh, very nice for you too.
Spot on.
Can you say it a little louder? Couldn't hear you.
I was saying that was spot on, and there are a number of other comments here in the log that reflect exactly the same point. Simon says, "It's a good point, Ivan. We can be redeemed in the last moments. As Christ said, we can repent at any moment."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Mark Rowe says this can theoretically happen in an instant. When we can then maintain it, might be how long, whether we can maintain it would be another question.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm thinking, there's another thought on this. You know, for all I know, you know, the person that appears to be, a resident of the brute world, or, you know, that has no outward appearance of speaking spirituality, or, you know, that seems to have lived a really ego-centered or selfish life, but, you know, who's to say whether that person hasn't had many, many, many repetitions and isn't actually an old soul? You know, it may be just an experience that person is having for the moment in that in the bardo. I mean, as a voyager, that person may actually not be so occluded or not be so inexperienced as the person seems.
We do have evidence of this. If some of those who are watching and listening now have had the occasion to do the Reno runs. We do have evidence that those folks who seem to be inept under, quote, ordinary circumstances, just come into their own under those circumstances, that they are actually at ease, competent, capable, functional. In fact, if I recall correctly, several individuals had outstanding capability to offer to the team under those conditions, under the conditions of doing the BARDA run. So we just, you know, we work with the situation, which is, I am a voyager, and I am experiencing the clear light as objective reality. That is the voyager's experience. What does Patricia know about this at the moment? Not much. You know, the mouth is running a lot. But this is the wonderful tool, which is the book says, read to the voyager, which gives you, the reader, opportunity also as a voyager. Cool, eh?
Yeah, right.
Really,
good.
Really cool.
I have here, Ivan, I have two requests to read comments from the log, if I may.
Please.
Mark wants me, I missed one of Mark Roach's comments. He said about, I'm not sure about the backstory on it. He says, but these comments make sense because sin is ultimately the error of separating ourselves from the whole, from the oneness. And the text keeps saying over and over that one of the big keys is recognition.
Yeah, absolutely. Recognition. Yeah, which is, I think that's really what Pat is talking about, waking up in the chamber, you know, waking up in the fourth chamber or the sixth chamber or whatever chamber involves recognition.
Winnipeg 9 states, I remember a conversation that I had with a friend at the Institute. He reported that he was reading to his father as he was dying. The father was always antagonistic to work ideas. At some point, he woke from his unconscious state and said to Al, very clearly, now I understand. Then he drifted off.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's a great story. Yeah, it's another good example.
Another good example.
Yeah. You know, along those lines, like, we're, go ahead, Harry. You got another one?
I have, there's a couple more, but I'll just pick one here. Puzzle Trick says, if you are reading to an individual who has not yet reached terminus, do you forego, or is there a substitute for, the bell rings, or do you just do a straight read? What constitutes best practice here?
Questions for another day.
Those are very good questions, but they're more involved
than a 30-second answer.
Yeah, that's great. Why don't we bring that one next week? Or post it on, maybe post it on Wings of Chaos.
Yeah,
who is that?
That would be great.
Don't let me get away without giving you 5 or 10 different responses.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you're going to be here next week, Pat?
No.
Hopefully? Oh,
no.
You're not? Okay.
Yeah, the following week.
All right. Okay. Well, I would say that's another reason, good reason to post it on You know, I would just like to say, again, we are running a little bit over time, but I just have to put in my 2 cents here too. But there's, you know, this subject that we're talking about here reminds me of that. There's some saying, I don't know if it was out of stand-up comedy or something, you know, that when a pickpocket goes out in the marketplace, all he sees is people's pockets, but when a philosopher goes out, he only meets philosophers. And, you know, this is EJ's version of this, which I was been exposed to times over the years. It's quite marvelous that, you know, I've seen him, you know, like in the checkout line at the grocery store, like have a 10 or 15 minute chat, you know, with a checkout clerk, and they might be talking about the prices of chocolate bars, or you know, or how difficult it is to deal with people with infants in the grocery store or something. But then he goes out, you know, and he takes and would take the groceries or whatever, and goes outside. And you know, I've heard EJ say, "Well, you know, somebody would say, "Well, that was very nice, EJ." And he would say, "Yeah, well, you know, 100, you never know, 100, 200 times down the line when we have that chat, we're going to be talking about the work."
Exactly.
And so, which is to say that if you see everybody as a voyager, if you are impersonating a voyager, if you're getting yourself into the space.
If you are voyaging.
Yeah, if you're voyaging, yeah, right. If you're voyaging when you're in the grocery checkout line, you're very likely to call out, you know, the voyager facing you as if it were in a mirror, as if it were in the mirror.
Exactly.
But so anyway.
In the mirror. Space.
But some of us are still picking pockets. Okay, but I know David is doing much better than that in New York.
Yes.
Philosophers all over the place.
Yes.
Needless to say.
And we will, Ivan will join him, and all of you will join him next week, and I will be back in 2 weeks.
Yes. Thank you all.
Thank you all for coming.
And
I'll have to
do this thing here. And please, if there are other questions that we didn't cover, please bring them next week, or think about posting them while they're fresh in mind. Post them on Wings of Chaos.
There's some nice comments about thanks and great class.
Okay, good.
Thank you, everyone.
And more compliments on Pat's hat. It's the Pat in the hat, you know, that one you got tonight. All right, okay, thank you all. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Hope to see you next week.
Thank you for being online there. Harry.
Yeah, thanks, Harry. Okay.
Thanks for guiding us this evening.
Good night, folks.
Thank you. Good night. I don't know. It says oh not. No,
no,
I don't
know.
No,
I didn't get it. Touch star 9.
Touch star.
Touch.
Star 9.
Usually says this recording is over, doesn't it?
I think so. Waiting, Auntie Christie.
Star 9 again. Yeah.